thankful for the Lord's goodness. It appears that he has been good to many over a long period of time. What more proof do we then need? The writer says, "If ever I love thee, my Jesus, 'tis now." The one expressed something here that another songwriter said. "Lord, I want to be faithful. I'm striving so hard to stay true. Giving each day a new part of me and longing to be more like you. But lately my mind has been thinking, Lord, how much can this broken heart take? But in the midst of my loneliness and all of my pain, in the distance I can hear my Father say, I can hear him say, stand. When you can't go any longer, you just stand. For there is one who holds tomorrow, and he has you safely in his wondrous plan." He went on to say, "I guess if he had not been here for me, the countless times that he's come through, if it had been so easy for him to walk away, if he hadn't been so faithful and true. And even in my darkest midnight, when not one friend could be found, in the midst of all of that loneliness and all of my pain, I can still hear him calling my name. I can hear him say, stand. When you can't go any longer, you just stand. For there is one who holds tomorrow, and he has you safely in his wondrous plan. When all your strength is gone, and you feel that you can't go on, he'll say, child, you don't have to walk. Just stand." We are in a time where sometimes that's all we need to do. Just stand. The writer says stand means to be or remain in a specified state or condition, to make a public profession of oneself or one's attitude, to remain firm or steadfast, to endure or undergo without harm or damage or without giving way, to perform the duty of or participate in as one's job, to adhere to. You and I are called to stand. To stay in that place that he put us, pure and clean and free from sin. To make that profession as we go along this pathway of life, sometimes verbally, sometimes non-verbally, but to do it in a way that others will be able to tell just where we are and how we stand. We are called to endure things, and not only to endure them, but to go through them without harm, without suffering damage, without suffering loss. And we are called to adhere to that gospel that he has given us. We are called to apply ourselves as we go along this pathway of life. In Psalms, the 24th chapter, starting with the first verse, the psalmist says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. For he hath founded it upon the seas and established it upon the floods. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully." Hear the writer. Took note of some things, and he recognized that everything in this earth, everything indeed in this universe, is God's. And all that you and I can find therein belongs unto Him. He established it all, and He hung the world out on nothing. And there are some things about this world that scientists have tried to look into and cannot explain, cannot tell you how it really works. They just know that it is there. But as we look upon this, He went on beyond all of that, and He pointed us towards what we really need to be concerned about, and He asked the question, who is it that can ascend into the hill or into the presence of the Lord and stand there in His holy place? Someone is going to have to do that as you and I walk upon the face of this earth. And so He gave the answer that that person who has clean hands, that person who has a pure heart, that is the one who can ascend into that holy place and dwell there with the Lord and carry out His bidding as God would have them to do as they walked upon the face of this earth. We find here, He said, that person who has not lifted up his soul to vanity, who has not sworn deceitfully, it is that person who is genuine in all of their dealings as best as they know and understand. That person who has submitted themselves unto God and will allow Him to purge them and clean them as they go along this pathway of life. That is the person who will be able to stand. That is the person who will be able to not only stand, but to arise and abide and accomplish God's biddings as they go along this pathway of life. And as we consider that, He asks, who shall ascend? That question applies to you and I in this then time. Will we be one of those who can stand in that place? Will we be one of those who can ascend to that place by the help of the Lord? And as you and I go along this pathway and we rely upon God's Word and His gospel, we find that yes, we can be one of those if we'll only pay the price and go along the way as God would have us to. You know, there is a need. A brother mentioned about a need for young men in this day and time. And we do need them in this day and time. Need them to help and to go out and carry forth God's Word as we go along this pathway of life. We need them in amongst the church that they might be an example to other young children coming along the way, that it might establish to little boys and little girls that this is something that men can be involved in. This is something that is important in the lives of every person and that it should be interwoven into their daily fabric of life. You know, there are those times where men have fallen down upon their duties, and so you find mothers are struggling, trying to be mothers and fathers too, but God didn't make them to be fathers. Nevertheless, because sometimes some have failed to meet that place, have failed to stand in the gaps, have failed to ascend to those holy hills, then we have some lacks here as we go along this pathway of life. Society is suffering greatly because of that very thing. And you know, even amongst us, we suffer because of some of that as we go along the way. When we begin to consider that when little boys see that their father is not afraid to pray in front of them, when they see that he's not afraid to go down to an altar of prayer and admit to God that he's in need of some help, it establishes unto them that I can go there and not be afraid too. And when you think about it, it's not something easy for men to do. In this world we live, a society that teaches young men that you're not supposed to cry. You're supposed to be strong. Don't show any weakness to anybody. And yet then when they come and God calls upon them and he says, submit it all unto me. He's got a paradox to deal with there. And he begins to be torn. Do I do this or do I do the other? If I do that, there's the devil right there to attack him and say, well, that's the way of weakness. No, it's the way of strength. But you and I need to exhibit that and show them that. And we can only do that if we stand and ascend to that place where God would have us to be as we go along this pathway of life. In Jeremiah, the 35th chapter, I want to look at a group of people that have always impressed me. You don't find a whole lot said about them, but nevertheless, consider the character that they exhibit at this point in time. Jeremiah 35:1, the word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go into the house of the Rechabites and speak unto them and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah, his brethren, and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites, and I brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hanum, and the son of Igdaliah, a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princes, which was above the chamber of Maaseiah, the son of Shalem, the keeper of the door. And I said before the sons of the house of the Rechabites, pots full of wine and cups. And I said unto them, drink ye wine. But they said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Then we drop down to verse 8. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he hath charged us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters. Now we drop down to verse 16. Because the sons of Jonadab, the sons of Rechab, have performed the commandment of their father, which he commanded them, but this people hath not hearkened unto me. Therefore thus saith the Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem all the evil that I have pronounced against them, because I have spoken unto them, but they have not heard, and I have called unto them, but they have not answered. And Jeremiah said unto the house of the Rechabites, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because ye have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father, and kept all his precepts, and done according unto all that he hath commanded you, therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab shall not want a man to stand before me forever. Here we find that Jeremiah was called upon to test these people. God was dealing with Israel, and he was trying to get them to turn from their wicked ways. And so now he's going to deal with them by putting forth an example of true obedience, that they somehow might feel their shame and be turned back unto him. And so he told Jeremiah, go get this group of people, bring them into my house, and set wine before them, and tell them to drink. Now in that time, as they lived in those ages, they could have legally drunk what he put before them. But 300 years before that, Jonadab had instructed them. He did not bind them, he did not make them swear to an oath, but he advised them, and he counseled them, that when you go forth, don't you drink any wine, you nor your sons, your wives, nor your daughters. He told them to live in tents and don't get in a place where you settle down in some dwellings. And so we find 300 years later, they're still following the counsel and the advice of their father. And we find here that it served them in good stead. But where are we in this day and time when God calls for us to stand? Sometimes people are looking for a place where I can do this, and they say there's nothing wrong with it. I don't have to go that way. But nevertheless, consider what the poor fathers have put before us, and you and I stand in that place as we go along the way. As we look here, Jonadab, it seems, somehow realized after he'd seen what the children of Israel had gotten into and how the drinking and other things had led them away from God. He did not want his people going that way. And so he gave them this counsel, and over 300 years later, they were still following it. And what you see right in there is that there were some men standing for what their forefathers had given them, and as a result, their sons and their daughters, their wives, were all following it too. Maybe they could have looked upon it and recognized, we've gone for this long period of time, we've been living in tents, and you know a tent isn't something very nice to live in, but I have a feeling that in them living that way, it caused them to stay humble before the forefathers that had given them those commandments and traditions, and it caused them to stay humble before God. When they considered that they stayed away from all of that drink and wine, no doubt there were many things that it saved them from by following that advice as they went along the way, and it kept them from getting settled down on their leaves as they came along the pathway. And so, as we say, over 300 years later, they were still following the commandments of their father. Jeremiah tested them here, and they politely told him, we will not drink wine. We've been told not to, and we're still going to adhere to that. But then in all of that, God pronounced judgment upon Israel. But Jeremiah came back to them and said, thus saith the Lord, you shall not want for a man to stand
stand before me forever. And so if you look further down, hundreds of years after that point, when Christ came and walked upon this earth, the writers point out that there was a group of people who, when Christ came and established the gospel, they embraced him and they took him in. And it said it was some of these very people, the descendants of the Rechabites, that were some of the first to embrace him and accept his gospel. So even at that point in time, there were still some of these descendants still following that way. And when the time came to where they needed to transcend from the law of Moses and accept the glorious grace of the gospel, they were right there to take it in and embrace it. And I'm persuaded that even today, if you could track it down, you would find that there's still some of their descendants still standing before God, still living as he would have them to live as they go along in this pathway of life, because he told them, "You will not want for a man of your people to stand before me forever. Who shall ascend to this holy hill? It will be those who have a clean heart, those who have clean hands, those who will go along this pathway of life and will accept what God puts before them and embrace it wholly as they go along the way." Right there you can see that you and I have a need to stand, because somebody else is dependent upon you and I standing there in that holy place. Had these people gone away from those things that their forefathers had told them to do, they no doubt would have been right there in a amongst the children of Israel, doing some of those very same things, and that one instance where they stood may have made the difference between somebody and their posterity standing for God forever or not standing there at all. As we go along this pathway of life, someone needs us to stand as we go along the way. 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, looking at the 13th verse. Very simply, the writer says here, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong." We are in spiritual warfare. Sometimes we have a person at home, haven't been saved very long, and sometimes they, as little children, and I'm not trying to belittle them or anything of the like, but sometimes they kind of cry. Why does it have to be like this? Why does it have to be so tough? And my sister made a comment. She said they're going to have to realize they were born in the time of war. Things are tough. This isn't the time of ease. It isn't the time of peace and prosperity, as a lot of people like to put it. She said they were born in the time of war, in the midst of a war zone. That's why it's tough. That's why it's hard. And you know, when you consider that, you and I need to keep that in mind. That is why he said, "Watch ye," because you and I are in spiritual warfare. And the evil enemy is out to overtake us. And not only overtake us, but one of the things about war is extermination. So he's not just out trying to overtake you, he's trying to exterminate you as you go along the way. And there are times when maybe the crisis might be heightened and we need to be more watchful than others, if you will. But nevertheless, at all times, we need to be keenly aware as we go along this pathway of life. And so here, he told them to stand fast in the faith. In other words, keeping the ranks unbroken. We sing that song. Says something about a multitude of warriors of the cross in serried ranks do bravely fight. Do you understand what serried ranks mean? It means shoulder to shoulder, lockstep, one by one, going forward. Nobody breaking ranks. Nobody turning back. But we're standing there next to one another in ranks unbroken. And we consider that our whole entire preservation depends upon us standing fast in the faith as we go along this pathway of life. To stand fast in that faith, you and I must then consider the credence of the gospel. Consider its credibility. Consider its quality. Consider what it was placed here for as we go along this pathway, that you and I might come to a place where we can be, as he says here, "Quit you like men, be strong." Yes. Oh, as we look upon it, when the writer said quit, it meant don't flinch in the battle. It meant maintain your ground. It meant to press on. Not only that, he said to quit means to let your understanding receive the truth. Let your judgment determine the need to hold on to that truth as you go along this pathway of life. And when you come to that and you make that decision, it will bring you to a place where you'll be determined to hold on to this faith instead of dying and giving up as you go along the way. It says we'll put our lives on the line for it instead of turning back, because we've got to be strong and we've got to quit you like men, as he said during his word. To be strong means we're going to have to put forth an effort to maintain that which we have as we go along this pathway of life. It means, as the songwriter said, let courage rise with danger and strength to strength oppose. You and I, as we go along this pathway, are going to meet some things, but you know there's something that they call in physics Newton's laws of force. One of them says, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And so they use that to determine how you can drive your car and roll down along the highway, how you're able to push something along the ground and overcome it. But don't you know, we need that same thing working in our lives today, that when the devil comes against us, he will find an equal and an opposite reaction to stand against what he's trying to push in over on us as we go along this pathway of life. You and I need to run to that place and strengthen the point of attack wherever it might be that he tries to come against us as we go along the way, because we've made that determination that I must stand. Oh, as I look upon it, brother mentioned others have cast their bread out, and that's the reason why we're all here today. In other words, not only did they cast it, but some of them had to stand. Some of them had to stand there and not flinch. You ever been in a place where maybe you in a place and you're in some pain, and yet they tell you don't move, you trying not to move, you know, maybe you're trying to get a splinter out of your hand or something. And as a child, seemed like when the mother began to try to pick on it and get a hold of it, they start moving, tell them, be still, be still. Well, you and I in that same place where sometimes when the devil attacks us, we're going to have to just be still. Don't flinch as we go along this pathway of life. Ephesians, the 6th chapter, starting with the 10th verse. Very familiar scripture. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. Here we are told not only to stand, but to put on something that will help us stand as we go along this pathway of life. We begin to consider we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but we're wrestling against various things that are out there in the world, put forth by Satan himself. You and I are having to confront spirits from time to time. You and I are having to deal with philosophies that are put out there in the world. You and I are having to deal with human reasoning as we go along this pathway of life. And sometimes we have to deal with our own reasoning as we go along the way. But nevertheless, he told us to put on the whole armor of God, that you and I might be able to withstand in the evil day, that you and I might be able to stand against all the wiles, all the schemes of the devil that he brings along and tries to overtake us with and overpower us with as we go along the way. He told them there then to stand, having your loins girt about with truth, You know, there's something about the truth that has a certain strength to it. There's something about it that when it's all girded up around that seat of strength, it will cause a person to be able to stand, to take all of the assailings of the devil, all of the doubts and fears that might come along the way. But not only that, he said he'd give us a breastplate of righteousness, his righteousness, to cover up the vital parts of man, to protect him, that he might keep his heart in this as he goes along this pathway of life. Said he'd have your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Why do you need peace upon your feet? Let me illustrate it in this way. Where I work sometimes, those big boilers have relief valves upon them, and they're supposed to be set to relieve in a certain order, and they're supposed to be set to relieve in that order so that it might not blow up the boiler. But you know, there comes a time when you have to test all of those things. And I remember that the very first time I was called upon to do it, I was about to be transferred to another plant, but the supervisor told me, "You ain't going anywhere until you get all of that done." And you know why? Because a lot of people don't like to take that part of the exercise and do it because it's dangerous and it makes people nervous. He even told me there's some gauges you're going to have to read. And when those relief valves go off, the whole room's going to fill up with steam and your feet are going to be wanting to run. But you got to stay right there and read that gauge and get all the reading so you can make the right calculations for the mechanic to set it like it ought to be. And I had told him somebody else was coming to take my place there. And I told him, "They've done this before. Why don't you let them do it?" Well, he didn't trust them. And then I told him, I said, "Well, I've never even done it before." He said, "You're not going any place until you get that done. Don't care how long it takes. They're not going to get you at the other plant until it's all through." Well, I got to find out exactly what he was talking about, because they were overpressuring the boiler, heating it up, making them go off on purpose. And you had to have some of the other relief valves all gagged up. And then when this one went off, if you had to make some changes, the mechanic had to get right down there in front of it, now right in that opening, and make some adjustments. And if anything went wrong, all that 1,000-degree steam be coming out right in his face. Oh, as I looked upon it, they all said, "Well, now we're ready. We're building up pressure. You're going to have to read the gauge." Guess where everybody else went? They all went outside. I had to stay in that room by myself. And there went all off, all that noise, everything filling up, trying to wipe off my glasses. Finally had to take them off, get right up on the gauge. And there I am trying to read it as quickly as possible, and yet thinking, "I got to stay in here till I get it done." Normally speaking, your feet are saying, "It's time to get out of this place," but you got to stay in. That's why he's going to give us something to put up on our feet, that we might be shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, so that in the midst of all of those trying times, you and I, when we might think we want to run, our feet can stay right there, flat-footed and firm, so we can stand for the Lord as we go along this pathway of life. Oh, he said, not only that, above all, taking the shield of faith, but he also gave us a helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit. And I think back that when it mentioned this in the New Testament time, back in the Old Testament, it said God himself, when he saw what man was in need of, he put on a helmet of salvation, took the sword of the Spirit. He proved it all himself. You know, there are those times where we need that helmet of salvation upon a head, because there are going to be some places where people are going to think we're not thinking too straight. But you know, we need something that will govern our thinking and cause us to go forward by the help of the Lord. Oh, as you look upon it, you consider some of these battles that men have been through here not too long ago. My father was in World War II, and you know, he never told us children very much about it. It was something he didn't like to talk a whole lot about, but somebody made mention about something here not too long ago, and he stood up, and for the first time any of us children ever knew, he'd been in every major battle that they had. He began to name them all off. Somehow God brought him through. But I consider that in those times of battle, I'm sure that those soldiers, many of them, were scared to go forward. Many of them wondered if they'd make it back home. In fact, he even said, when he sent home some letters, he knew from the response of his parents that they didn't think he'd make it back, and he wasn't sure if he would either. But nevertheless, somehow with what they had to go forth in battle, they went on anyway. In that instance, somebody stood that this country, and indeed this whole whole world might be free. You and I, as we go along this pathway of life, some are going to say, why do you go that way? People are going down. You know we're going to lose some in the battle. That's just the way war is. But even as the songwriter said, their ranks are being thinned, but still onward, they do proceed. Somebody's got to stand as we go along this pathway of life. And part of that standing is to press the battle on as we go along the way. Oh, he's given us the armor that we might be able to do just that by the help of the Lord. All we find here, you and I have been called upon to stand. You find there the military with all that they do. When people stop and say, why would you want to go out? I remember when I was just getting out of high school, a young man that we knew had come by, stopped to see us, and me and my dad was working on the car radio, and he stopped and started talking to me, and the man said, well, how old are you? And I told him, and you're about to get out of school. And he said, well, you ought to think about joining the Army. Get out and see a little bit of the world. My dad never said a word, never said anything at all. But when the man finally left, he told me, you don't want no part of it. He said, I've been there. And I've done enough shooting and enough fighting for the whole family. He said, those people know where you are. You don't have to go tell them. If they want you, you let them come get you. But you know, the thing about it is this. They'll point out to you that in the world today, even with all of the troubles going on, that the military is one of the best recruiters in the world today. And you and I might stop and look at it. Some people even ask me, well, don't you think you'd want to go and join the armed services? I told them, no, I'm not interested in dodging bullets for nobody. I'm not interested in all of that stuff because I can see that it's not all that it's made out to be. But nevertheless, there are those who will sign up. They'll tell them, come be all that you can be in the Army. They'll tell you, I'm looking for just a few good men to be in the Marines. They'll tell you, come join the Air Force and soar like the Eagles and whatever else they can do to impress you. But nevertheless, many people are going that way, and I understand that there is a need for that to some degree. But nevertheless, what I want to get to here is that God is still calling for every soul to come and stand and to be all that they can be for Him. He'll truly help them to do that as they go along the way. As you look upon it, you're going to meet some things. You're going to encounter some things. But you know, my youngest brother is in the Army. Been in there since he got out of high school. Has gone on to be a drill sergeant for a while. Is an Army Ranger. One of those special forces people. And he'll tell you just a little bit of what they put them through while they were training them. Make them subject themselves to a lot of things that seem to be real cruel. Make them subject themselves to a lot of things to establish under them that in the midst of battle, you can still yet accomplish what you've been sent to do. And he's been in some battles, and you can see some results of it too. But as you look upon that, what I want to get to there is that with all of that that's involved, with all of the stuff that you can see behind the scenes, yet you see people are still going forward. God is calling for you and I to stand as we go along this pathway of life. And yes, he's going to subject us to some things as we go along the way. He's going to subject us that you and I might know we can go through. He's going to subject us that you and I might show others that they can get through too if they'll only come this way. Amen. Oh, as we look upon it, you and I need to learn how to stand. I thought too about another person out at the plant. He was being trained to be a control operator. He was being trained to watch everything and make sure everything's all just right. But he had an old man that was really putting him through the mill. And he'd get to watch. The old man would walk up to him and get to talking and holding a conversation. Then he'd reach back behind and he'd twist the knob. And then he'd walk away and sit down and watch to see how long it takes for this young man to figure out what was going wrong and why it was going wrong and what he needed to do to correct it and then get it corrected before he had a problem or before he tripped the unit off and lost it offline. And so he said, you know, I thought he was pretty mean and pretty sneaky and pretty dirty. He'd come up and get to target. He said, it took me a while to figure out what was going on. He said, finally I recognized when he comes over and he's talking to me, watch and see what he's doing so I can straighten it all back up and won't get in trouble. But nevertheless, we find that the old man would be there with him. Even though he'd walk away and sit down, he'd watch it. And if he recognized that the young man wasn't figuring it out soon enough, he'd go back over, straighten it up, and then tell him what he'd done and why he should have done what he needed to do in order to correct it. And then it came time where they had the unit calling for maximum load, running every ounce of electricity out of it that they could get. And he was on the board, and the old man was right there with him. And he told him, crank it up. Go ahead. Push it to the limit. Take this water and string it out as far as you can go. Push the fans as high as you dare to push them. Run as much amperage through them as you possibly can. Stretch this here out to the limit. And he'd look at him and he'd say, it's all right. Keep right on going. You know what he did? He caused him to know and to learn just how much strain that unit could take. And he began to recognize that this stuff is worth a lot of money. It would cost hundreds of millions of dollars to replace it in this day and time. But nevertheless, he learned that I can do some things and this thing will bear up under the load. The Lord wants you and I to learn to stand. And he's going to take us to the limit sometime. But it's done that you and I might learn what we can do as we go along this pathway of life. That you and I might be able to stand and meet the demand as we go along this way. Sometimes people are looking on and they'll tell you, I want to see something. But you know, when you and I get to where we can meet that demand, they'll be able to see it. And when I say that, I don't mean stand there all upset. I don't mean stand there all disgruntled. You and I can stand there and have a smile, not only on our face, but deep down in the heart, to where they can look and say they've really got the good. Oh, as I look upon it, my mother-in-law, some have been watching her, been considering some of the ways that she has about her, but you're beginning to hear the same thing over and over, that if you're going to get it like Sister Shirley's got it, because she's got the real thing. They can see she's been through some things. They can see she's still going through some things, but they find that she's still happy as she goes along the way, because she learned to stand. Oh, as we go along this pathway of life, you and I can do the same thing as well by the help of the Lord. In Malachi, the 3rd chapter, starting with the 1st verse, he said, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. Who is going to abide the day of his coming? Here they let him know that Christ was coming. They had been asking, when is the Messiah going to appear? When is he going to deliver us? And the prophet answered them, that he is coming. But when he does come, who's going to be able to stand at his appearing? As I look upon this, want to look at it in just a little different way and ask the question then, who is going to stand to be refined by this refiner? Who is going to stand and say, Lord, purify me and get the dross out? Who is going to stand that they might be able to come to a place where they can ascend to his holy hill and stand in his holy place? As you and I go along this pathway of life, the only ones who are going to be able to do it is you and I. The only ones that will be able to do it are the ones who submit under his hand. Now, will we stand and look to him and say, Lord, please purify and refine me as I go along this pathway of life? You can see from the Rechabites that someone stood long ago and someone is still standing today. You can see from your own experience that someone stood before you came along, and because of that, you and I are able to stand today. Now what will we do? Will we stand and we will allow him to refine us, that somebody coming on after us might yet be able to stand as they go along this pathway of life? Consider what one other songwriter had to say. He said, Lord, I will stand until you come for me, regardless of my condition, in spite of my situation, I will stand until you come for me. Lord, I will stand until you come for me. When the trumpet sounds, we'll be heaven bound. But until then, I'm going to stand. I will stand until you come for me. He's looking for someone to stand. We have a need to do it. And I pray, and I trust you pray for me, that we'll all be found doing it together.